Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
Knowing your why gives you a focus point that you can keep walking towards. Everybody says, like, when you fail, just keep getting up and keep moving forward. But where is forward in this analogy? What if you're just punch drunk and you're on the ground and you're willing to get up? You don't know where due north is. Like, you don't know where your North Star is at. You don't know where you're going. And knowing your why can be your North Star. It can be your focal point. When you get up, no matter how punch drunk, you can find it and move in that direction.
Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs, David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
All right. Welcome everyone to the Firing the Man podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, Carlos Alvarez. Carlos is the founder of the largest Amazon sellers meetup group in the world, which is located in Miami, Florida. Carlos has had huge success in the e-commerce space over the last decade and has recently started sharing his knowledge on his podcast, The Wizards of Amazon. Welcome to the show, Carlos.
What's up, man? Thank you guys for having me. What's up, David? What's up, Ken?
Hey. Yeah. So I think starting out, Carlos, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did this e-commerce journey start? And tell us about your path to success.
Yeah. Before saying that, I have a confession that I've been binge listening to your guys' podcast ever since Ken pointed out that the name of it. I recently listened to one about how you guys are using like the calculator to determine profits and stuff like that. It's the most in-depth discussion on that topic I've heard in 15 years. So I loved it. I got it and I shared it with some of my VAs and I'm like, hey, that thing we were talking about, this, look at this. So great job, guys.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you.
My backstory, I just did everything wrong as a kid. I'm assuming this podcast is under an hour, so I got to do this fast, but like it's everything wrong as a kid. I literally walked out of fourth grade elementary school and just walked into a store and I guess five-finger discount, some fishing supplies. I went fishing and I never went back. Very bad household that I grew up in. So nobody was really checking. And I kept doing that wrong thing for a long time. My peers or people that became friends later on, they didn't. They went to school, the normal thing. They got a high school diploma. They went to college and they were getting these jobs that paid money that allowed you to get a home, you know, like get a home and like do adult things. And I was, you know, a dairy clerk in Publix, delivering subs in a sub shop, selling cigars. And I had an expensive ex-girlfriend, which I should thank her because it's what got me into selling on eBay. I got hooked on the process of selling on eBay. Friends and family saw that I, mind you, at this point, this is, I'd say 16 and a half years ago. And friends and family saw that I was doing something that wasn't going to land me at either like life in prison or ODing. And they were like, let's support this. And they were throwing that term around like entrepreneur. I had to look it up. And I'm like, yeah, that's me. Finally, something I can identify with. And they pulled together $81,000 and I went to my supplier. My most profitable product at the time was this adult novelty item, this silicone ring with a motor. I'm going to leave it for that. And it was for guys, but I'd get it for 16 cents. We'd sell it for 20 something dollars. And I went to my supplier, Elvis from Pleasure Chest, still exists to this day on Alibaba, by the way, if you want to reach out. And he told me we don't have 80,000, obvious to us now, you know, as successful, you know, entrepreneurs and accustomed to working with suppliers, no one holds like $80,000 of inventory there with your perfect packaging, right? So I got offended that he didn't have the inventory. I thought, you know, wrongly that all factories held that kind of inventory. And I found someone else that had it on Alibaba. Keep in mind, this is approximately 16 years ago on Alibaba. Like, this is wild, wild west. It looks nothing like what it looks like right now. And I found someone, a guy named Usman Cisse, and had a factory in Hong Kong, and I sent him the money, and he stole everything from me. That was truly my low point. I knew how to be broke. Like, there was not going to be a major lifestyle change because that money was gone. It was more, I liked being called an entrepreneur. I liked people looking at me. I liked people asking me about their ideas and whether they'd be profitable. So I tried to hide, successfully, I guess, hide the fact that I got ripped off. And one of the things I went to go sell to get some seed money to keep going is two of my reptiles, and a Burmese python, Columbia red-tailed boa. And the person in front of me in the reptile store, well, in the pet store, was paying $25 for 50 live worms. Something just clicked. I mean, I have to say, it's almost insanity, especially knowing everything that truly goes into running a successful business selling live insects online. It was insanity what I did, but I did it. I couldn't even afford the bins that I would eventually breed these things in. I find an article at a library about zoos potentially saving money by breeding these things, insects like superworms, feeder worms, Jamaican crickets, stuff like that. And instead of buying them top dollar on the private market, I started breeding them. I couldn't afford the bins. I started going to garage sales, paying pennies on the dollar, you know, this hodgepodge thing of bins, creating these environments that they could breed in, eat in, live in, but not escape from, which I wasn't always successful. And this is a residence. So at one point when I exceeded, it was five different types of insects, and each one had over 3 million of each, and I'm selling them. Code enforcement comes to my house one night. I mean, imagine 3.5 million crickets going off at night. It's definitely, it's like, forget it. You can't imagine. Like, I had earplugs in the house. So I bluffed them and said, if I threw it out, it'd be an agricultural disaster. They went for it. Friend lets me get a warehouse, rent free half of it. It wound up being my whole thing, because who wants to work in an insect warehouse? And long story short, I guess, is, you know, 9-10 months later, I wind up, I'm working 90 to 100 hours. I'm sleeping on the floor, making every mistake known to man. And I wind up getting approached and sold the company for $2.6 million. And then I've just never looked back.
Awesome. I love that story. I love that story from so many different angles. What was the name of the company, if you don't mind me asking?
Miami Insects.
Miami Insects. All right.
Nothing otherworldly. I said, we're in Miami and insects. And that business sold. I had a non-compete for several years. And now I restarted the business, and it's actually one of my highest grossing and most lucrative brands right now on Amazon.
That's awesome. So you sell your company. Where do you go from there? You got a non-compete. You can't get back into that market. What do you do now?
$2.6 million at that time to me meant I could buy anything however I wanted for as long as I wanted. And this is where not having a formal education or maybe a few business 101 classes would have served me justice, because I was single. I had felt totally betrayed, that, you know, everyone was, my girl left me. Keep in mind, 15, 16 years ago, if you said as an adult that you said that you sold on Amazon or eBay, that was seen as extremely juvenile. And it was not something that, you know, your potential wife, and I'm assuming husband as well, but that your potential wife would look at you and say, yeah, I see financial security here. I see we can have kids. Everything's going to be fine. That's not what that communicated, not to anybody. And it didn't even communicate that to me. It was like, oh my God, I'm a total failure. Let me just somehow keep connecting the dots, connect the next dot, connect, just keep moving forward. Learn from everything I do wrong, do it better, and just keep moving forward. And I know it doesn't work out like that for everyone. Well, let me not say that. I think a lot of people quit, but I kept going and it worked for me. So I'm sitting here at $2.6 million. It is not $2.6 million, which every broker, lawyer, IRS, and everything gets a hold of it, right? So we're still sitting at a really nice number. We're sitting at a little over $1 million. And I think what I did could only be described as I decided to whore around Miami. I really just did that. And I was like, all these things I couldn't have, I'm now having. That expensive bottle, give it to me. And I started living a life around Miami that's really so unlike me. But I thought, this is what you do. And truth be told, there were some good memories in there. And I did that. And then one day I just realized at this point next year, at this rate, I will be broke. And I will not only be broke, but before when I was broke, I didn't really know anything better. But now I'm going to be broke and I'm going to have had a taste of what not being broke is like. And I know I didn't want to do that again. So the only thing I knew that had been validated in my life that I could do good was sell on eBay and Amazon. And I decided at that point that I created a company called, I think it was called Hyperborean. And we started a brand selling beverage chilling devices. And we were one of the second or third person on Amazon to start selling whiskey stones and like these accessories to beer and wine and bar tools. And it just went gangbusters. And then I started opening more brands and, you know, doing the wholesale model and making every mistake along the way. I don't want to paint this into this. I'm the genius who had it all solved. Like, I think I've touched the stove more than a lot of people and been burned. But I just have this thing where it's like, there's a song out there now and it really resonates with me. And I see a lot of people saying, I'm rambling here, so cut me off whenever. But I see a lot of people and they're like, man, it's just everything is so bad. And I feel like I'm just looking down at everybody and everybody's doing, and I'm thinking, the song says, if you're on the bottom, there's nobody beneath you. There's no looking down when you're on the bottom. You're not really on the bottom. You just think you're on the bottom. If you're looking down around you, you're not on the bottom. There's still a ways down to go. So having the advantage of truly being on the bottom allowed me, when you're on the bottom, almost every option's a good one. So I wasn't concerned about what someone thought. And I just said, okay, I made a mistake. Well, I'm still kind of down here. There's only up from here. And I just kept going.
That's awesome. You know, one, perseverance seems to be a huge theme for you in that story. And, you know, one thing that Ken and I talk a lot about is when people are down on their luck, there are two types of people. Some people will take action and do something to get themselves out of that situation. And some people will sit around for 30 years and complain about that. And you know, when I think of the man that I want to be, it's the person that perseveres when times get tough. Right now, we're recording this on April 7th, and we are right in, you know, what I would call the middle, who knows, of this COVID-19 outbreak. And I think that, you know, for some new sellers, they may see this as something that is crushing maybe the brand that they just launched. And, you know, you have 16 years of context, right? So for some of those people that are getting discouraged at this time, what would you tell them?
I think it's important to not ignore the situation we're in. Like there are definitely things are not going to be the same as they were before. And when you hear that, I think, like you said, there's two types of people that when they hear that assume one side was possibility and the other side was this graveyard, right? And that's not the case. I think the other side, while being different, is going to be better. And it's not just being an optimist. It's a bazillion reasons. I mean, one of them, the biggest complaint a lot of people are struggling with is if you have a non-essential product and you can't send it in right now. It's like, okay, you know, that even then there's workarounds without getting into all the workarounds there are. But imagine Amazon does not do this essentials, non-essentials thing. And after this, how many fewer people now have a Prime account because they couldn't get their freaking toilet paper from the place they're paying $112 a year from, right? How many people are no longer just default, I buy on Amazon, which is our products, right? Versus this very temporary. I mean, I know a lot of people whose non-essentials are already getting accepted to go back in. And we're looking at what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? How many more people have a Prime account now and that are going to be buyers on the end of this that weren't before that are buying our stuff? So there's so many situations like that I see that, not that I needed it, but reconfirmed to me that we're so on the right side of this as e-commerce sellers, as Amazon sellers, as businessmen in this day and age. So having said that, I think it's important to acknowledge that. And something that I've done, and it's there's no, if you duplicate what I'm doing, it may not work for you. You got to find your thing. And that is whenever I'm dealing with things like, oh my God, what am I doing? Is this advice that I gave good? did I make the right decision here long-term for my family? I have imposter syndrome. I'm down. Like anytime I'm feeling like that, I acknowledge it. I acknowledge where it's coming from. And I'm like, okay. And then I have my, you guys are going to laugh here, but I have this playlist of a few videos, and they've changed over the years, but a few videos and a few songs that I pop my beats on and I immerse myself into it. And I let that feed my brain and I let that feed me what's going on, and it snaps me out of it. And as soon as I feel like it didn't snap me out of it, I tweak my playlist. Right now it's that, well, this one's been there forever. And it's that E.T., Eric the Hip Hop Preacher, Wanted as Bad as You Want to Breathe on YouTube. And the other one is one by Arnold Schwarzenegger about he doesn't believe in plan B. No plan B. That's my thing right now. And that's what I do. And it allows me to take that next step forward, retool what's going on, reevaluate my priorities, recenter, and keep going forward. And I think everyone needs to either do that or do something like that for them, because ignoring the fact that we're in the situation we're in is insanity.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of things that you said that you talked about, Carlos, I'd like to unpack those a little bit. Now, the songs and the videos that I follow you on your Telegram, your Facebook, and you know, your whole group, and you sent those out a few weeks ago, you know, when this stuff was hitting really hard. And I think that was huge to have a, you know, something for motivation and something to grab onto and kind of ignite, you know, kind of spark. Yeah. If you can share those, we'll put them in the show notes for anybody listening. Sure. Hey, if you need something, you know, to get you over that hump, to get you that motivation, that's awesome. In your story, you tried a bunch of different things. And it sounds like you reflected back and thought, you know what? Hey, I'm really good at this one thing. And then you just went deep in on that. And, you know, I think sometimes that's, if you try a whole bunch of different things, you know, and something doesn't work out, something goes, and then finally it's like you have a good fit, then you double down on it. I think that's huge.
Thank you. Thank you for that. And thank you for being connected over there. And thank you for all your help at the beginning of this too, so that I could share with my group, you know, the whole Merchant Fulfilled angle on stuff. But the video, I'll share the links with you guys afterwards. So definitely can go in the show notes. None of it was created by me, obviously, but that video, that plan B, not believing in plan B that Schwarzenegger puts out, that is something I've kind of lived by from the beginning. I saw that thing that I was good at and I doubled down on it. I didn't say, even though this video didn't exist then, I didn't say, let me focus my energies on plan B and plan C and plan D in case that doesn't work. My plan A doesn't work, and divert resources from my plan A. It's kind of what, it's what I've lived by. And I think it's an advantage of having experienced a lot of failures. You can find great advantage in having failed. And I've had plenty of my share of failures. So I just learn from them. And I'm at a point now where when I fail, you know, that human side of me is like, oh, but there's a much greater part of me that says, you know, I just leveled up. Like, and it's important, I think, to do that.
Absolutely. You mentioned this reset button of listening to music, watching videos, taking some time for yourself, and then making a path forward. And I really like that. And I think everybody has something that's a little different. You know, it might be a long walk in the woods, you know, one in particular. And I think judging by what's on your playlist, there's a YouTube video out there by Jocko Willink. He's a retired Navy SEAL. Called Good. And I love that video, and it gets me pumped up. It's good at recentering me and helping me regain my focus. When I have failed or things haven't gone my way, I can tell you I've watched that video 2 to 3 times in the last couple of weeks, just because I am experiencing some struggles right now in my business, and trying to see the good in that is really helpful. And so I really like that.
I know that video well.
Oh, good, good.
Nice.
I want to dive into some of your biggest failures, if that's all right with you. You know,
absolutely.
That's one thing. You know, on a lot of these podcasts, you hear people talk about, you know, these huge successes and huge exits, but there's a ton of learning that goes on in the failures. And Ken and I have been pretty transparent in the failures we've had in our business. And I'd be curious, what have been some of your biggest failures as you look back in the rearview mirror at 16 years in e-commerce?
My God, we would need 100 podcasts to cover all of them. But so I'll share some of the ones that come to mind. I'll try to pick a few from the beginning and a few recent, but a lot of the really big ones were in the beginning, just because I wasn't I wasn't thinking things through enough, and I wasn't treating it like a business, and I didn't know what treating something like a business even meant. So one of the things is I didn't learn what cash flow was, or that it was even a term, for about 4.5 years into my business, and things just always went up. And a few of the businesses that I started in the beginning, the few of the brands, like a hair brand, you know, the bar and wine tool brand, cigar accessory brand, we sold them because the person that I brokered the deal with, they were constantly coming back, say, hey, what else you got going on? What else you got going on? And we would sell them. The wholesale business, though, stayed, or the reselling business on Amazon, it's called the wholesale business, it kept growing. And we quickly got that to, you know, 16 million in gross sales. And mind you, I was a real totally different person again than what I am now. But back then, you couldn't have a conversation with me without walking away and me not having let you know that I was some kind of millionaire, right? Like, it was just like every other word was, all right, you don't know what I make. And a real jerk. I couldn't be around me. I wouldn't have bought me a drink back then. And the truth, though, was that when I would go to gas stations, I've shared this openly with my group. Like, when I would go to gas stations, I would have to cycle through the last four digits of my credit card. I have my ex-girlfriend in the car, and or one of my exes, and I'd say, I'm trying to figure out which card is not going to decline.
Okay.
I wasn't looking for points. I was trying to figure out which one of my cards would not decline for gasoline in my car, right? Like an old Durango. Like, it wasn't even like a sports car. You know what I mean? It was like an old Durango. I think it would have took $90 to fill the tank. I was concerned I couldn't fill the car. Mind you, it was doing about 16 million gross. And that just kept getting bigger. That gross number kept getting bigger and kept getting bigger. And my problems and my concern for gasoline and other like groceries kept becoming an issue. And at the same time, banks kept seeing these huge numbers come in, and they kept offering greater and bigger amounts of loans and monies, and the cabbages and the cash advance people, they'd loan money. And then friends and family are like, man, I'd love to just make an extra $2,000 a month. Can I invest some money with you? Absolutely. And we would just get all this money. And so eventually one of the partners ripped the other partner off, and I sat down with a friend, and I'm just like, I got to figure this out. I can't lose my millions. And there was no books. And he sat down over an entire weekend of pizza and beer. And at the end of it, he says, the good news is you don't need a lawyer, because you're broke. You're broke. You're not only are you not a millionaire, you're broke. He goes, what you are really good at is moving money and not making money. And I couldn't understand the difference. I didn't even know which one was good and which one was bad when he said it. So one of my huge mistakes then, and I guess can be summed up in know your numbers, is understand what cash flow is. If you didn't go to college, you can still be successful. It does not mean that there is not some really solid information that you could have learned had you gone to college and learned some, like, you know, cash flow 101. So cash flow is important. Know your numbers, huge. Another crazy thing that I did was one of the first cigar accessory businesses that I started. I had the validation from having sold the insect business. But when I sold that first business and realized I need to really tweak my lifestyle or I'm going to be broke next year, I didn't know if it was a fluke. I didn't know if I could do it again. I didn't know, could I replicate this in another brand that's not insects? There was different competitors and different, you know, that were not selling insects. People that sold insects seemed to be some store where this is a side thing, and I was making a full-time go at it. So I crushed them. Oh, maybe that's not the case when you're going against the Metro Canes and the Venturis of the world and, you know, these big brands. And I didn't know. And I was in a really weird place there, but I was still moving forward. And then I had a girl I was seeing at the time had a sister, and she had a boyfriend. And that guy and I would sit in my backyard smoking cigars, drinking rum, and just talking about taking over the e-commerce world all the time. Mind you, he was a few weeks away from a full ride scholarship to be a doctor. And he one day saw, you know, some cigar cutters I got imported in, and he said, man, I want to partner with you. And I'm thinking, you really? Like, this is a doctor. Like, this guy's a genius. He like aced everything in school. Like, and for somebody that smart to see something so amazing in me, I just jumped on it. And I said, yeah, 50-50, bro, 50-50. And we did. I amended it immediately right there. I didn't even know how to set up the printer and go online and do SunBiz. He did all that. I'm like, oh my God, this is what I need. Somebody that knows how to install a printer and can copy and paste. And he's a 50-50 partner. And something that I'm blessed with is tons of ideas. I know some people that's like not the case, and I'm blessed with tons of ideas. So every time I had an idea and I had the connection to do it, I went to him and I said, hey, I got another business. You interested? Yeah, bro. Yeah. 50-50. And I did this non-existent, you know, org chart, no structure as to who's responsible for what in their business. And to this day, I have over 16 business partners. And the majority of the time that we speak to each other, it's through lawsuits. And my picture of all my groomsmen, including my brother, that we've got into business together, be based on the lack of organization that we had in our structure and not being aligned. I lost all my close friends. I lost my brother. So that was another huge mistake I'd have. I think there's a power in partnerships. You need to set it up right. And I try to like emphasize that with everyone. There's a book called The Founder's Dilemma by Noah Wasserman. And I just beg anybody I see that's close friends or family that are getting into business together. I'm like, bro, please read the book. Like, it's even the audio book by Noah Wasserman. Please read it. I pulled over in tears several times listening to the audio book in my car. Like, I thought someone was in the backseat talking about me. And you're not doing that out of a lack of trust for your partner. You're doing it because you respect and love your partner and you want this to go. It's The Founder's Dilemma by Noah Wasserman. So that's number two. I don't know. You guys want me to keep going? Because I could do this for hours about mistakes.
A couple of things I want to unpack here is, so you've talked about those failures and I was honored to hear that you've been binge listening our podcast. I have binge listened your podcast.
Yes.
As my only
subscriber. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Wizards of Amazon. For anyone listening to this, stop now, hit pause, go hit subscribe. You won't regret it.
Thank you.
But one thing that I've noticed is team building. That's something, and networking. That's something that you really seem to excel at. And so I'd like to kind of go back and revisit some of these failures and talk about how you may have addressed those. So for instance, on cash flow, what are some things that you did to respond to this, right? You knew it was an issue. And same thing with setting up partnerships. What have been some things that you've done differently?
Definitely. Cash flow was one that I needed to address quicker. It took, unfortunately, many years before I realized that the problem with the partnerships was not, it's very easy to say, I'm bad at picking business partners. I pick bad apples. But you go in 20 business partners later, there's a common denominator there, right? And it's you. It's the guy in the mirror, right? So it took many years to realize that it was me, and not me personally, but me in my lack of, if I had the idea and I presented it, I needed to also present the expectations that were there to do the idea justice. I needed to understand who would be the best fit to partner with, if anyone, to allow this business the greatest opportunity to succeed. But that took years later. Cash flow, honestly, I think this is the first time I'm ever going to say this like openly or on a live or anything. I don't believe I'm good at it to this day. And I understood that then. And what I did is say, and this is something that's allowed me to really build some brilliant people and some teams around me, is clearly understanding what I'm good at and what if I was responsible for doing this and I woke up with dread in the morning knowing, oh, I got to do this today. Getting it off my plate. And those numbers and that cash flow and where are we at with this? Is it a good time to buy this? I'm not that good at it. And I've hired someone from that day forward to this day who full-time just, you know, as a bookkeeper and accountant, stays on top of that for my companies. So that's how I solved that. And there are some certain things in my business that I've encountered along the years that I'm just like, you know, I could learn this, but I absolutely hate it. Anytime Excel opens on my, it just gives me heartburn. Like, let me hire someone a lot smarter than me to do this. And that's what I've done. That's how I address cash flow.
Nice. I'm putting Founder's Dilemma in my audio book library as soon as this podcast is over. And it makes me happy to hear from you that you struggle with cash flow, because cash flow is one of the largest problems. It's a constant problem as I'm growing and scaling my own business. So to hear that, you know, it doesn't go away. But, you know, outsourcing and getting help is, I'm like you, it doesn't work for me. I'd like to kind of pivot a little bit as we wrap up the show and talk about networking. And so David and I met. David created the St. Louis e-commerce meetup, and that's where we met and kind of started networking and building relationship. And this podcast was kind of born out of that. So for the listeners that don't know, you have the largest meetup for Amazon sellers in the world. Yep. So can you kind of go into that and explain how that grew and what benefits you have of surrounding yourself with, you know, like-minded people and spreading your knowledge?
Sure. I used to meet every weekend with a small group of friends that we started selling around the same time. And we've grown at about the same pace, but over years, we just got tired of the same war stories over and over. And we didn't meet every week religiously, but we met at least two or three times a month for years. And I've used meetup.com and community building just in general to launch brands in the past, that I'd use that community building and those meetup groups to launch brands on Amazon and launch products on Amazon, harness that local IRL in real life and focus it towards Amazon. So there was one other person in my group, to Fabian, a friend of mine, that he did the same thing. And for us, it was a very logical next step. It was like, well, we want to get some fresh blood in here. We go to meetup.com and we know how to properly announce and advertise our group and attract followers if they exist, right? So the first meetup group that we set up, meetup event, was at a Starbucks near my house in case nobody shows up. And I had four people show up, and over the next few months, one person, three people, but I still took pictures and I still posted and I still went through all of my processes that I would normally do. And that meetup has grown over 3.5 years to almost 4,000 members on and off of Meetup locally. I think on Meetup itself, it's like 3,000 something. And of that, there's about 1,600 very active members. We meet 16 or 17 times a month now. Six of those are in Spanish. The rest of them are in English. The benefits, well, apart from the benefits, when I started, my main reason for starting was to get fresh blood and to throw some ideas around. And I had always wanted to have, and I still to this day want to create an annual event that is not just Amazon related, but that's more of e-commerce. I think the world's a lot bigger than Amazon and it's e-commerce focused. And I felt that having this base of people in South Florida would allow me to make sure that event, you know, got full. And that if I offered a lot of free value, that when I went to them, I was like, hey, I got this ticket to sell you. No, you're not getting a discount. Like, remember all this value I've given you? Like, this is my ask. That they'd do it. I also wanted to be, still do, would like to be an author. I want to be able to put that book out and have a huge base of people that would buy. What I didn't get when I started the meetup was the high that came from being the guy presenting and then seeing people like it, use it, and it worked. That was addictive to this day. I don't know if that makes me sound like a jerk getting off on a high, but it's a high. There's no way around it. It's a high. And it allowed me to not let it feel so much like work. And I also have a marketing consulting company that focuses a lot on Amazon stuff. So what happens? I knew this. I put out a lot of free value. Somebody really likes what I'm telling them, and they're probably going to reach out to me and say, hey, I know you offer services. You want to work together. And if we're a good fit, we work together. So there's an ROI on it too. The benefit is I get to see every single type of Amazon selling model. This is not just a private label Amazon sellers meetup group. We talk wholesale, we talk private label. I don't do arbitrage much anymore, but yes, I'll have events even for arbitrage for people that are doing arbitrage. We talk about making money on merch by Amazon self-publishing. I got in the Amazon transportation program when it came out to get some vehicles. Like everything you can possibly make money on Amazon, we talk about. And we also bring in some like multi-channel selling. Because again, the group is an Amazon group because you need a focus. But again, it's so much bigger. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to tell you, 2 years ago, I was looking for a meetup in the St. Louis area for e-commerce sellers, and I didn't see one. And I waited around for somebody to start one, and I ended up just starting a meetup account and starting my own. And you know what? If you're familiar with the movie The Field of Dreams, there's a really famous quote in there: "If you build it, they will come." Well, I can tell you, if you build a Shopify store, people won't necessarily come. However, I have found that with Meetup, if you build it, they will come. And as an e-commerce seller, you can spend a lot of time by yourself in your office, and it can be a kind of lonely existence, right? You know, the title of our show is Firing the Man, but oftentimes you see people that will quit their full-time job, they'll fire the man, and they're lonely. And I think as humans, we need a tribe. And that's been something that I've really, you know, Ken and I, we hit it off right away. And, you know, it was funny. My wife was sick of listening to me talk about PPC and conversion rates. And Ken had the same story. And so him and I just started getting together for beers and chatting, you know, about our Amazon stores. And so I have since looked at the Miami meetup that you've started in and have kind of started to model that. It's been awesome. It has been awesome. And so I would say to any of our listeners, if you're looking for something like this and it doesn't exist, start one. It really is not a lot of work. It is incredibly fulfilling, and it has been a positive ROI activity on my business for sure.
Yeah, I would even say any Amazon organizers, they are. We recently created just a WhatsApp chat, nothing to sell, but just for organizers to, there's a lot that goes on to put on a good event that's quality. And I mean, 3.5 years now at 16 times a month without repeat topics, that's, I don't even know how that happened. So like, and each event is 1.5 hour, 3 hours. So I'd love to, you know, create a group. If you have one in your area, it doesn't, you know, if you don't have one in your area, like, and you want to create one, don't worry about the topics and the content and the structure. I'm an open book, and we'll have that WhatsApp chat and we can share. And yeah, it's all about building the community.
Yeah, that's awesome. Definitely want to be respectful of your time, Carlos. So we'll go into a lightning round. We have 4 questions that we ask all of our guests. David, go for it.
All right. What is your favorite book?
I'm going to say, and this was my coach, Chris Ducker, at one point that did this, and it's going to be Virtual Freedom by Chris Ducker. It's how I began my virtual teams that I built.
Awesome. I'll have to check that out. What are your hobbies?
Scrabble. I'm a competitive, almost gambler when it comes to Scrabble. And I play chess, and I'm just a voracious reader. Those would be my 3 hobbies.
That's awesome. Nice. I like it. I've never met a competitive Scrabble player. So yeah. That's really neat.
Yeah, it gets real.
All right. Number 3, what do you think sets apart successful e-commerce entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
This is going to sound cheesy, but it's know your why.
Can you go into that a little more and maybe talk about your why?
Knowing your why gives you a focus point that you can keep walking towards. Everybody says, like, when you fail, just keep getting up and keep moving forward. But where is forward in this analogy? What if you're just punch drunk and you're on the ground and you're willing to get up, but you don't know where due north is? Like, you don't know where your North Star is at. You don't know where you're going. And knowing your why can be your North Star. It can be your focal point. When you get up, no matter how punch drunk, you can find it and move in that direction. My why has changed a lot over time. And at sometimes it wasn't a good why. It's possible to pick an unhealthy why. I think in the very beginning, it was amass a lot of money. And I think a lot of people start there. Later on, and for the most part, it's been I came from every manner of abuse possible. I came from a home like that. And I wanted to be able to provide a healthy, financially stable home for my wife. And I imagine kids. So I now have 2 kids. So that's my biggest why right now. But I still have smaller whys that want that money. So it's not totally unhealthy, but my major why, if everything went down and I just was punch drunk and didn't know any, you know, where my North Star was, I could say, this decision I'm going to make, I'm going to head towards it because it's going to get me closer to that situation I want where my family's going to be at.
Absolutely. I love that. And as a Ken and I are both fathers, and I can definitely relate to that. It's definitely made me a better person, more centered, and recommend it to anybody. So awesome.
It's a very strong wife.
Yeah. Absolutely. Lastly, we've already mentioned the Wizards of Amazon podcast. Everybody should check this out. But how can people find you?
I'm very active on Instagram now. I would not have thought I'd be active on Instagram 2 years ago, but I'm very active on Instagram at Wizards of Amazon. Facebook group, Wizards of Amazon. I'm on there a lot. And then you can connect to like our Telegram chats through there. And then I suggest you take me up on this next one, but I leave my phone number in these podcasts and you could actually just text me or call me. My number is 305-902-1283.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right.
Carlos, we really appreciate you coming on the Firing the Man podcast. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlos.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to today's Firing the Man podcast. If you like this episode, head on over to firingtheman.com and check out our resource library for exclusive Firing the Man discounts on popular e-commerce subscription services. That is firingtheman.com/resource. You can also find a comprehensive library of over 50 books that Ken and I have read in the last few years that have made a meaningful impact on our business. For that, head on over to www.firingtheman.com/library. Lastly, check us out on social media at Firing the Man and on YouTube at Firing the Man for exclusive content. This is David Schomer
and Ken Wilson.
We're out. Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A.com, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?